What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Coming up on this episode of the Mario Rosenstock podcast.
I always felt like I was like the diversification tick. I was like, yeah, girl, yeah, half black, yeah, you know, from Fur House, oh, made it to Trinity. Tick, 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 tick. Yeah. I always felt like I was the, you know, that
totally.
One.
How do you think you got on this podcast?
I know,
exact
it's amazing.
Same. You are diversity tick.
I use what I have, okay? And I think that's what you have to do. You have to just kind of take what you have and go with it.
Well, that clip is just a small taste of the crack I had with Nadia Adan on this week's episode of the Mario Rosenstock podcast. You may not be familiar with Nadia. If not, it won't be long before you are, because she is genuinely a force of nature, hugely ambitious, incredibly personable, and I think destined for great things in whatever she ends up doing. Nadia was born in Somalia, but had to flee when the war broke out many, many years ago, and her mum found refuge in Ireland, where they have lived happily for over 20 years. An entrepreneur at heart, Nadia has become very successful in the motor industry. She's Ireland's only female car showroom owner, known for her unique approach to marketing on social media, TikTok and Instagram, and her controversial stance also on electric cars. In this chat, Nadia shares her amazing backstory, her entrepreneurial journey, and her opinions on electric cars, social media, and immigration.
We got arrested at one stage because we got caught coming through borders, and we were in a jail for like a year, like really bad camps, you know. Then we arrived in O'Connell Street and we literally dumped in the middle of Dublin city centre in O'Connell Street. Can you imagine, like, looking around going, where the hell is this? Like, and I sat down CFO and I said, why did you pick me out of everyone? And he said, Nadia, everything that you need to know about the job, we'll teach you. But what you have is cop on. And that's harder to get these days.
And can-do attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
You can see that for me a mile off.
We're not taking in any more electric cars. We're not selling them. And that's a pretty big statement to make. But it's a statement I had to make because the pricing of it recently in the last couple of months is just, it's like the stock exchange. It's just off the wall. Yes, Derek, we've got lots of different cars. What's your budget or what are you after?
Budget, depends, anywhere between, let's say, 25 and 45.
Okay, that's a very nice budget. Are you looking for a family car?
No, I'm talking about a woman.
Oh, well, well, come on up, Derek.
All that on the way in a couple of minutes' time. But first, it was a very big week for our new Taoiseach, Simon Harris. And yes, of course, Gift Grub was all over it earlier this week. And you've guessed it, yes, we managed to get exclusive access to his first voicemails that came to him in Dáil Éireann during the week. And we can bring you exclusive access to the kind of messages he was getting since becoming Taoiseach.
Hiya, folks. You've reached the voicemails of the Taoiseach, Simon Harris. God, I can't believe I'm actually saying that. But anyway, leave a message after the TikTok tone. Thanks. What's that stupid sound? Simon! Sorry, Taoiseach, this is the President. Enjoyed a few pints up in the Aorus last night. Jesus, for a fella that looks like a haunted pencil, you can certainly put him away. My head is like Oliver Plunkett this morning. Anyway, where were we? Yes, do you remember what I was saying about that last fella? He gave me far too much lip. I get to say what I want. Comprende? Good.
How are you, love? Sorry, Taoiseach. It's Mammy. Sorry, it's Heather here. Listen, I left a packed lunch out for you this morning, love, okay? And an extra carton of Ribena. I know how much you like that. Oh, and two chocolate digestives for your tea break. I'll pick you up outside the gates at Kildare Street, 5 p.m. sharp. Bye!
Hi, Simon. It's Miriam O'Callaghan here from RTE. Simon, would you be interested in doing a little interview with me, a kind of a coming-out interview about anything that's in your past history? Anything you'd like to, you know, share with me? Drugs? Plagiarism in college? Did you ever try on a dress and think, ooh, that feels rather nice? Give us a call. The pressure's on big time in here, by the way, so do me a solid, will you? Thanks. Miriam Meads is waiting. Thanks.
I'm really looking forward to see how Simon Harris pans out over the next, oh, well, we give him 9-10 months before he gets his P45. Back to the Oris with you. Anyway, what a story we have for you on this episode. Nadia Adan has lived a life unlike most others, I think it's fair to say. And I was delighted when she agreed to join me in studio. It was our first time ever meeting. It was my producer, Patrick, who brought her to my attention. And I was absolutely delighted to meet her. And what a force of nature she is. Enjoy.
So listen, Nadia, I'm making a podcast here.
Yeah.
And one of the podcaster's dream is when they talk to somebody who has a story.
Yeah.
And boy, do you have a story.
Yeah.
One of the most fascinating biographies I've ever read.
Yeah.
And particularly the kind of Ireland we're living in at the moment.
Yeah.
You're kind of the perfect storm of podcasts.
Yeah, I'm kind of, I suppose I'm new age Irish. Like, I am Irish, but I've been here since I was about 5 years old. So I've been here 27 years, you know, but my mum is Somalian. I have that type of a background. I came here as a refugee with my mum. I've made my life here. Ireland has been amazing, so welcoming. I remember when we ended up in O'Connell Street here in the late 90s, we had people giving us £100 notes back then because they existed back then. And it's unbelievable to think, because people were so, so welcoming, and we got feted and we went through the system, and mom had 2 jobs, 3 jobs, 4 jobs, put me through school, put me through my degree, my master's in Trinity, everything. And then I went and let her down and started selling cars on the side of the road. So listen, it's been absolutely mad, but a journey nonetheless.
My God. And is your background Somalian?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me what you know of your background, what you remember of your background,
yeah,
and your family background.
Yeah, so again, it's crazy. I feel like I've blocked out a lot of the stuff because, first of all, I was quite young, and second of all, a lot of the stuff was traumatic. So I think, you know, in your later years, you block out certain things just for your own. But my poor mum, she's been through a lot, but she's a very, very strong woman, and she's had to be, you know. So we left in the early 90s when the war happened in Mogadishu. I came from an amazing life. I had a driver, I had a chef, I had everything. My mum had her own company. She had an airline business. So she, I believe, was one of the first African women to have her own airline business in Africa. And if you can believe this, in her early 20s, she used to go to Moscow and lease Antonovs and Cessnas and work with the UN to bring in medical supplies into Mogadishu at the time. And then when the war happened, the Americans shut down the airspace, would then shut down her business, and we lost everything overnight. But I had a huge house. I had, like, we had help. We had everything. Like, you know, I was getting brought to school. My clothes were coming from France. Amazing life. So that all went overnight, you know.
So you and your family,
yeah.
Was your dad involved?
He wasn't, no.
So you and your family, you and your mum would have been part of the tiny percentage of elite, yeah, rich people.
Yeah.
Who lived? Somalia is yeah, a poor country, right?
It is generally, but like, it's like any African country. It's the divide is huge. So you've got a percentage of the rich that have everything, and then the poor that have nothing. So there's no real middle ground. But they are, like, you know, if you go to Africa and go to different places, you'll see wealth like you'll never see before. But then the poverty is 10 times as bad.
And yeah. Was your mother from a wealthy family?
No.
So she was a self-made woman?
She was self. So this is how self-made she was. So she sold all her mom's cattle on her when she was 16, and she got a flight to Germany when she was 16 years of age. And she stayed in the Hilton for like weeks, went missing, partied, had German boyfriends, the whole lot, and then came home
so
with
your
nothing.
My mom, wild child.
Came home
of
with
the
nothing.
80s, maybe.
Yeah, like, yeah, 80s. Yeah, so yeah, like, it would have been the 80s, I suppose, when she was like maybe in her teens or whatever. And yeah, so she came home, and then she got in so much trouble because, like, she ran away, and like, she would have been from a really like Muslim background. She wasn't at all. She just didn't fit in. She didn't believe in all that. Like, she has her, you know, culture, but like, she didn't believe in the heaviness of it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So she used to run away, she used to come get caught, brought back, and like, her life was very traumatic in loads of other ways I probably shouldn't get into because it's her story to tell, not mine. Mm-hmm. But she self-made, she had this airline, and then after that she had a tourism company as well, which did well for a while. She did, she organised, I don't know if you remember, the rally championships, the Tour de France, like back in the 90s, the French used to love coming to Africa to do safaris with the motorbikes,
yeah,
and she used to organise all of that and, yeah, bring them over. And Michael Schumacher was actually a guy she had that came over. Robert Redford, when he did Out of Africa in Kenya, he was another guy. So she was just really, she also had an opportunity to go off when Iman, I know you, you,
yeah,
know Iman, David Bowie, she's, yeah, Somalian,
yes,
and the same guy who picked her actually picked my mum as well, but she just wasn't allowed to go. And they wanted to take her to Japan or New York or wherever it was. And her mum said, absolutely over my dead body are you going.
So was she a beautiful woman?
She was stunning. She was like 6 foot tall, really thin, you know, the long Somalia neck, like really just stunning. And I'll show you pictures after of her. But yeah, she'd every guy after her, and, you know, she'd be in the nightclubs and all the French soldiers and all the men. And, you know, she's just, yeah, she lived an amazing life. She's an amazing woman. And so when we lost everything, you know, she wasn't just going to curl up and die in a ball with me. You know, she was like, I'm going to get you somewhere so you can have the best life. And for her, education was key because she didn't have one. She was just a self-made person, and she would lose businesses and start again. So we you know, we didn't really know where Ireland was or what Ireland, who, like Ireland, who, where the hell's Ireland? We didn't know where we're going. We just were trafficked, and we went to different countries.
You were trafficked?
Yeah, we were trafficked. Yeah, we came like how everybody did, through like boats. And when we left,
and somebody made money.
Yeah, exactly. You would get money and you would get a passport. And he's just, you know, he would just be trafficked like with everybody else, and you would be trying to get to another country. You didn't know where you were going, but you're just trying to get to Europe or trying to get anywhere to ask for asylum. So we ended up, I think it was Sudan. We were in Sudan for a while. We were in Kenya first, and then we went to Sudan, and then we ended up in the desert. And then, like, we were there for, this was like a period of 3 years of traveling before we got to Ireland. Yeah, we were like, I think we left when I was like 3, and then we were going around till I was 6 or 7. You know, until,
possibly don't remember that much of it.
I remember bits and pieces. I remember one night we were like in a camp, and there was like 50 of us and kids and my mom, and it was always me and my mom. I just went everywhere with her. Like, she could have just left me in Africa, but she didn't, you know. And I just remember like one night we were all walking for what seemed forever with like bags on our back, and you know, it was crazy. Like, it was, but that's, I only remember bits and pieces, and that's why I think my mind is like, maybe doesn't want to remember. I don't know.
It's trauma.
Might find that bit of therapy now. This might all come out now today.
This is the therapy, Nadia. I am your therapist.
I know.
Talk to Mario.
I will. Tell me, am
Talk
I okay?
Talk to Mario. So presumably during this period with your mom,
yes,
and the 3 years,
yes,
on the way here,
yes,
there were some very, I'd say there were some very, very sticky moments.
There was, like, you know, we got arrested at one stage because we got caught coming through borders, and we were in a jail for like a year, like really bad camps, you know, really, really bad camps. And yeah, it was awful. But again, I was very, very young, so I really don't remember
it. So you arrived.
She did. Yes. Then we arrived in O'Connell Street, and we literally dumped in the middle of Dublin city centre in O'Connell Street. Can you imagine, like, looking around going, where the hell is this, like, you know? And we asked where the Justice Department was, and we went there. Mom asked for asylum. I think she remembers, she told me, like, as soon as she felt like she was somewhere permanent, like that she was in Ireland, she like fell to the ground. She'd felt such panic all the time, like moving around, like not knowing where we're going to go, what was going to happen. My education lacked, like, massive gap as well of like school, of all the moving around. So I had a lot to catch up to, you know. And yeah, so we just ended up in O'Connell Street and got in, got vetted, whatever, got put into kind of like direct provision today. But back then it was like a B&B, and there was only a few of us, and it was all very small scaled, and we were only in there for a couple of months, and we were then given a house very luckily, and mom could work, and that's what she did, and put me through school, and that's what we did.
And what did she do?
So she started off cleaning toilets in a pub, and if you can imagine, like, my mum is,
I love your mum. She is some.
She's so high, very classy lady, very high. Like, she walked into a room, she would just be like, I'm the best thing in this room. But that's her mindset, her fight mindset. So fight or flight. So yeah, so she started cleaning toilets. But like, she did what she had to do. She cleaned toilets. She used to walk from Fir House to Walkinstown every morning to work in a factory packing boxes with other women who, I remember she told me on her first day she went in, and they weren't too happy about her coming. Because my mom's black, like, you know. With me, I get away with it because you wouldn't know where the hell I'm from. Then I've got the accent. So.
Yeah, just for, because we're on a podcast.
Yeah.
So for listeners, first of all, you're a beautiful woman.
Thank you very much.
And you have what?
Tan skin.
Tan
yeah,
skin
I'm not.
Eyes.
I'm not precious. Don't worry.
Long brown hair.
Yes.
And so not typically
and a,
like a Somalian.
And a Fir House kind of a Fir House. Tint of a Fir House accent, as some people would say.
Oh, definitely a tint.
Dundra, a tint. Exactly. Whereas you'd kind of know straight away, okay, my mum is quite dark, you know, but she's beautiful, but she'd be dark. So, you know, it was a bit tougher for her than me, because I could integrate and I could get in there and, you know, get on with everyone, and I had the accent then. but she, it was a bit harder for her. But everyone was very nice to us. Like, we really don't remember that much racism or anything like that, genuinely, you know. And I think that's the good news story, is that, like, you know, we came here, I went to school, my mom started working, and we get on with people and they get on with us. And Irish people, I think, genuinely aren't actually racist, because they know what it feels like. I remember, you know, no Irish, no black, no dogs. You know, that's really, they know what it feels like not to be welcomed, and they're not like that. It's just when you push them into a corner, when you push things down their throat and you go, this is my way. But if you meet them halfway and you get to know them, they're the most friendliest people in the world, you know.
So you went to school in Dublin.
In Fir House, yeah.
In Fir House.
Yeah.
And your mother worked away at all sorts of different jobs.
Yes.
And your mother put you through school.
Yes.
And you then did fantastically well. Obviously, by being a young girl, you were able to pick up English really quickly. So you were
English
fluent.
English was my first language.
Even in Somalia.
Okay. So mom was very strict that, like, that's what I had was English first. And I even, like, go on.
Yeah. And then your mum helped to get you through school, and then you ended up going to Trinity.
Yeah, ended up going to Trinity, which was a mad story. Did you go to Trinity?
I did.
What did you do there?
Economics, Business and Social Studies, BESS.
Stop, yeah. Was that the four-year degree?
Four-year degree, yeah.
I just did the Masters, so Masters in Finance.
Ooh,
yeah,
well
so
done.
Yeah, so I'd done 4 years in IT Tala, and then my mum was like, that's not good enough, you're going to Trinity. Yeah, so I didn't even want to go to Trinity.
One year in Masters?
1 year,
did you enjoy it?
I loved it. I loved the library, I loved the crack. I loved meeting.
Being in the centre of town.
Yeah. Being in the centre of town and meeting people from all over the world. Like, that master's, like, it's an expensive master's. Mm-hmm. It's like 25 grand a year.
Right.
Yeah, like, it wasn't cheap, and we didn't have it, but
She must have progressed on from cleaning toilets at that stage.
Oh, she did. Well, yeah, she did. She actually opened up her own business, which she now has for the last 20 years.
Amazing.
So she's doing very well for herself.
She's
but she just survives. You know, and I think maybe that's what I do as well. She told me, she goes, I don't want anything to do with social media. She's very like, don't get me on camera. I don't want people to know my business. That's how my mom is. I'm like, everybody know my business.
Yeah. So that's fine. So finance.
Yes.
And then you went into stockbroking.
Where? Yeah. I was an equity analyst first for about 3 years. I know it's
brilliant.
Mad. Like, I'm just not, you know, it's funny. My personality wouldn't be that, really, you know. But my mum again wanted something with security.
Yeah.
She wanted something.
Perfectly understand.
Her whole thing was education. If you will always have a job, for her, she'd start again all the time, because she'd know, you know, real background of built up qualifications, even though she'd all this business experience. So that was the key, was education. And to be fair to her, I really fought her on it growing up. Looking back now, she was dead right. And even if it's not what I did in life, it's a great base to have, because it lets you, like, be able to talk to everybody from all walks of life and understand lots of different things that's happening around the world. And that's very important to excel in any business.
That's really
know?
Well put.
Yeah.
Because even I have a 16-year-old.
You don't. You look too young to have a 16-year-old.
And he'd go, what's the point in all this education? What job can it get you?
Andrew Tate, like, gone.
Stop. Now you have me.
I know.
Oh, you're reading my mind. My world.
I can only imagine.
And he says, what job can it get you?
I know.
And I went, it's not about getting a job necessarily. Yeah. It's about having an understanding of the world so that you know how to meet people, know what things are about.
Yes.
Know why this happens.
Exactly.
And then you use your natural people skills, who offer you a job don't offer them on the basis of your education.
No,
anyway.
They don't.
They like to see a box ticked, but they go, is this person got cop on and brains and common sense?
100%. And even, like, to prove that was when I went and finished my master's, we all went for this one interview as an analyst. And I think about 20 or 40 of us went from the class. And I was never a straight A. I was actually probably a D or a C. I always coasted. I always, like, would go to my lecturer and I'd always have the crack and go, is there any chance I get an extra week on that or whatever? You know, I just got by. And I got on with all the lectures. I got on to all my students. So they'd give me a bit of a hand or whatever. That's just the way I always was. And how I got through life, you know. And there's a lot to be said for that as well, because it's not far off when you're an adult and you need to go, any chance I can use your car for a video, and you know, and that gets you know. So it's all about, you know, giving somebody a hand up, or somebody giving you a hand up or whatever. And I've had a lot of that in the car business, a lot more than I care to admit. But anyway, so went for an interview. Few of us had gone for it. It was a 4-round interview. We had to present a stock. We had to, and I was going against, like, you know, Chinese geniuses, German geniuses, you know, like these people that like literally like were on the calculator 24/7, had lived and breathed Trinity and like were studying all the time. And I was only coming out from night out trying to get into my class. Like that was me, you know, but I just made it. And so long story short, I got the job, and it was the first job role they'd ever given out as a junior equity analyst. So it was a very small team and it was amazing. You weren't going into like a big four where it was you and 100 people. It was you and just your team of like CEO, CFO, portfolio managers, analysts. So like you made it what you could. You were sitting beside portfolio managers. You were getting the most amazing experience. It was the best job you could get out of college, and the money was amazing and everything was amazing. So I went in, I got the job, a 4-round interview, and I sat down CFO and I said, why did you pick me out of everyone? And he said, well, Nadia, everything that you need to know about the job, we'll teach you, and you can learn that from a book. But what you have is cop on. And, you know, that's harder to get these days.
And can-do attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
I can see that from a mile off, that you're a can-do.
Yeah.
You look at I could see that you're kind of person who might look at a problem and go, okay, this doesn't look good, but what can we do to make it just even get to the next base here?
Yeah, yeah. Or I'm just a good waffler.
Maybe I just did your talking for you. Yeah. You made me sell you for
yes,
years. See, that's
there
how good you are. You made me sell you to the public.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And presumably this was a fairly male-dominated environment,
the
world of equity analysis.
Yes, equity, yeah. I think we had 3 girls in total, and they were like, you know, nearly out the door type of thing. So I was really, I think with me, I always felt like I was like the diversification tick. I was like, yeah, girl, yeah, half black, yeah, you know, from Fur House, made it to Trinity, tick, 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 tick. I always felt like I was the, you know, that
totally.
One.
Totally. How do you think you got on this podcast?
I know, it's amazing.
Same. You are diversity tick.
I use what I have, okay? And I think that's what you have to do. You have to just kind of take what you have and go with it. So yeah, no, absolutely it was.
So then you were earning a few quid.
Loved it. Finally earned my own money.
And am I right in saying you got a nice car?
I did. Got a gorgeous car. BMW 320 M Sport Coupe in the manual. It was
colour.
White. It was the pearl white. It was gorgeous.
Flashy.
I was such a ride going around the place, if I can say that. I just felt so cool. And before that, my first car was an Opel Corsa that my mum helped to buy. So, you know, this was a big step up for me, and I'd taken my first loan, like we all do, and I was driving it or whatever. And yeah, I ended up selling it one day on my lunch break, and I can't remember why, I think I didn't get a good deal or something, and I just said, oh sure, I'll throw it up myself. And you know, buying and selling equities is like buying and selling cars. It's just, you buy low and you sell high. There's just different factors that affect the pricing. So, you know, sold it, made a few quid. And I went, geez, that was a bit of crack. Did it again. And, you know, you are allowed to buy and sell a few cars yourself a year before you have to put anything through the books or anything.
Yeah.
Legally, you actually are, because you can just be buying and selling them and changing cars. There's no issue. So I did that for a while. And then eventually I just wasn't happy in my job. And I just made the decision. I'd built up a bit of capital. I built up a couple of cars, and I just made the decision to get a yard just before the pandemic. It was literally February 2020. The pandemic was March or something. It was literally like a month before, and I'd taken out this lease on a yard, and I had a couple of cars, and I quit my job, and then the pandemic happened, and I was like, holy shit, what am I going to do? And yeah, there you go.
Well, so this is the plot twist.
This is the plot twist.
Because you came from, I love summarizing.
It's
you
crazy.
Came from war-torn Somalia.
I know.
The daughter of a very rich mom.
Yeah.
You travelled for 3 years around the world. You eventually landed on, as you say, O'Connell Street.
Yeah, it's
you
mad.
Sought the Justice Department.
Yeah.
You got vetted. You got settled in Ireland. People offered you, were kind.
Mm-hmm.
They offered you £100 notes.
Yeah, they used to see me and my mom on the street. She said the first day people, they felt so sorry for us, and they would just be given the money. Are you okay? There you go. There's money, you know. And
you came up through school in Dublin.
Yeah.
You did a master's in Trinity, a degree, and then a master's in Trinity. And then you got chosen to be a junior equity analyst. And then you sell a car. It gives you a new idea. I'm going to be selling cars. I want to sell cars.
Yeah.
And then the pandemic hits.
Yeah.
And now the reason you're in this studio is because you've become so successful at selling cars for Ashford,
Yeah, Motors. Ashford Motors, exactly.
Ashford
yeah.
Motors. And my producer, Patrick, what really wanted to get you on the podcast, because he was showing me your story, but then he showed me the Instagram, because you're
and
big
TikTok.
On Instagram and,
yeah.
and TikTok, 130,000 on
yeah,
Instagram.
We're actually 180 now.
180
yeah,
now.
But we did grow.
That's just after this
that's
podcast.
Just, yeah, exactly.
And,
yeah. And after this podcast, we're going to shoot up to a million followers.
I'll wait and you see.
I know.
And then,
I'll hold you to that.
Yeah. Mine's a Golf GTI.
Yeah. Benefit in kind.
Yeah, definitely. And so you set up this thing and you are famous now, becoming locally famous in Ireland as well for your innovative way of selling cars. You have no compunction about sort of saying, as you said to me a minute ago, I have what I have and I use what I have.
Absolutely.
And you're a beautiful young woman.
Thank you very much.
And you're empowering yourself, I guess, by going, here, I'm a beautiful young woman. I'm going to show myself off in these sketches.
Absolutely.
And you do some little skits as well.
I do little
on
skits.
Instagram.
Yeah, I
and
cover all my bases.
You do. You play a yummy mummy.
I play a yummy mummy.
I thought that was
Range
a funny
Rover.
Sketch. You do lip syncing.
Yeah, loads of people have reached out to me going, that's my wife. That's my, I know. You know, and that's the whole crack, you know, of it is connecting with people. You know, it's having the ego of not going, oh, I want to be seen as great all the time. Like, I can take the piss out of myself. Yeah. And it's what people want to see. It's not what you want people to see. And I think that's where, you know, some people get it wrong. Like, I can go and get a car. Oh, hi, how are you? Look what we have into stock. No one cares. People are going to buy the car anyway, or they're not. Mm. The cars, they know about the car.
But you can draw people's attention
You can have the car behind you there, but then I'm connecting with the audience. Yeah. But look, I know I sit here
Tell the audience yourself what kind of stuff you do on Instagram.
So when I started...
Come for the tips.
Come for my great tips. Come for my great tips. Thanks, Mom. Anyway, so I suppose it's like any industry. Like, we've seen, you know, how Netflix have come into different in industry, and it was a catalyst and it wiped out DVDs and Blu-rays. And I really think the motor trade is a bit like that. We are so used to traditionally just seeing men in suits, big dealerships on the side of the road, and you go in and you're shown a car and that's it. And I know there's lots of women that work in the motor trade, but they don't really are out in the front line kind of getting, you know, getting the camera or whatever, you know. So it's like any industry, when someone kind of new comes with like a new idea, but the product is still really good and the customer service is still really good. So I focus on all those details, that everything is still really good. The product, the customer service, everything, the way we take our photos, like our Google reviews, everything. Then you can market how you want to get the views. Mm. But this all has to be right. So there's, you know, I could be out there with my boobs on show being great. But if my product is not right, I will be knocked off the shelf straight away.
But you don't hide the fact, you don't hide your glamour, and you don't hide the glamour. You wear sort of leather suits.
Yeah, absolutely.
G-Wagon.
G-Wagon girl,
They're
really expensive Mercedes SUV. Yeah. They're big petrol ones. You probably see them going up and down Donnybrook and, you know, up and down this road.
By Louis Walsh.
Yeah, exactly. I know Lou
was.
Hi, guys. God, poor
you. Look amazing, Nadia. But thanks.
I'd love Louis every day to get me up for the morning. But I tell you, I'd say Louis's going through a bit of a tough time now, but we won't get into that. Anyway, so the reason I was dressed as Catwoman is because I did a charity calendar. I wanted to do a calendar for Men's Aid, and I raised €5,000 for them just since January. It completely sold out. I sold worldwide. I sold to America. I sold to England. I sold everywhere. And I was able to raise that amount of money for them. And the reason I went with Men's Aid is because my audience is like 80% men, and I wanted something that would reflect that, because I would have a lot of guys ring me going, look, I'm having a tough time or whatever, and I'd be chatting away to them.
Do a lot of men come into Ashford Motors just looking for a test drive?
No, because I filter them out on the phone and they're too afraid to come down just to wreck my head.
Go on, I'll do the phone with you.
Yeah, okay. Hello, Ashford Motor Sales.
How are you doing? My name is Derek.
Oh.
And I'm in the market there for the car. I believe you have a good range of, what's the range again?
Oh, how you doing, Eric? Derek. See, that's goes to show how good I am. Yes, Derek, we've got lots of different cars in a lot of different budgets. What's your budget, or what are you after?
Budget? Depends. Anywhere between, let's say, 25 and 45.
Okay, that's a very nice budget. Are you looking for a family car?
No, I'm talking about a woman.
Oh, well, come on up, Derek.
sorry, back to that. Was a bit of humour there, yeah.
Ah, no problem, Derek.
I'm on Tinder as well, if you're interested now.
Well, listen, maybe come up and buy a car. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah, can I get a test drive?
You can. Now, just tell me this. Do you need finance or do you have a trade-in? Yes. So there's always... look, we don't... chase people yeah. away because I wouldn't be
no,
in
I
business.
Get your point.
But there's little questions you can ask to know. Now, look, again, someone can give you all the right answers and still show. Yeah. But I think the way I'm set up with social media, people aren't going to come out and they're not. They're just, and like the cars I have, they're not 10 of the same cars. They're very specific cars and people kind of know what they want when they come out. Now, look, you still have test drivers and stuff. Yeah, it's just the name of the game.
And how are you doing?
Amazing.
Is business going well?
Amazing. I did 10 cars last week, which is huge for me. Like I'm a margin business. I only do a couple a week because of the size. I don't have a load of staff. I don't have a load of overheads.
You did 10 last week.
I did 10 last week, which is a lot for me. So now I have to replace those 10 and that's just as hard as
what
nice.
What kind of cars do you sell?
Look, every car is ideally what most of the time what we have is kind of German brands. I'd like to stick to Germans like Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Golfs, Volkswagen, Skodas are great. Okay. And then I'll have a few high end stuff. So like a small percentage will be like Aston Martins, Bentleys, and I'll keep to the kind of higher quality and the higher premium stuff, which will get a lot of footage and get a lot of social media. And then we've all the daily stuff then that moves every week.
Yeah.
So
so last week was a good week. You sold 10 cars.
So this week I'm super stressed because I have to replace. It's like a shop. You can't have
stock
half empty, you know, so I'm just trying to replace all the stock from last week.
Yeah. But you have to enjoy yourself first of all and celebrate the fact that you sold 10 cars last
week. Don't celebrate anything when you sell cars. As soon as one's gone, that's it. Like you don't get high fives for 2 days. You get a high five there and then you're like, okay, well what about the other one? Are you going to sell that one? And that's the way, that's kind of the mentality. As soon as one deal's done, you move on to the next deal, you know.
Okay, Nadia, apart from your great story, which is an element, which is a brilliant element for any podcaster, you also have another element that's great for this podcast, and that's called controversy.
Yes.
So you've had a little bit of controversy in the last 2 weeks. Tell me all about that.
Yes. So I suppose I publicly came out and told the world, which I didn't think it would like get, but that's what it feels like. Like the world knew about it, is that Ashford Motors, we're not taking in any more electric cars. We're not selling them. And that's a pretty big statement to make, but it's a statement I had to make because the pricing of it recently in the last couple of months is just, it's like the stock exchange. It's just off the wall. And a business like myself that only sells two or three a week, if I get affected with one of these price changes, or if I take an electric car that's out of manufacturer warranty and something goes wrong, they're not cheap to fix. And I can't risk my business to take, because I know businesses that have lost 10 grand on a car, 7 grand a car. So I've just come out and says, look, I'm removing myself from this. I'm not doing it. Because what happens is someone locally comes to me to try trade in their electric cars. I was getting 4 or 5 calls a week of people trying to get out of their electric cars back into diesels, genuinely, and even downgrade. So a 2023 Tesla, they want to get back into a 2017 diesel. And then I'm trying to get them a price, and the price is so bad that they think it's me locally giving them a bad price, and then my reputation gets ruined locally. So I just said, I'm not having that. So I'm going to come out and just say, I'm not taking them in for the moment, for the foreseeable. I'm not biased. I'm not against green. Of course, we all want a better, environment. But financially, it's not feasible for my type of business. And it's not for a lot of secondhand dealers. And two or three...
You must be speaking on, without saying you are, you must be in speaking for other secondhand dealers.
At the time, I was speaking for myself.
Yeah. But by the nature of your business, you must be.
Yeah, exactly. Because you'd be ringing other dealers going, do you want to underwrite that? And they'd be going, no way do I want to underwrite that. Or like, what would you give for that? And it's like 20 grand less than what they paid 6 months ago. Just insane prices that you wouldn't have had that fluctuations with diesels and petrols. Now, a lot of people can say, oh, this is short term. This is. That's all well and good. But what about my bank account? I'm not taking the hit. And what about poor Mary and Joe down the road who got finance on a car and now they're in negative equity? So unfortunately, the consumers are getting hit. And I just said, look, I'm not doing it. And this is why I'm not doing it. And since then, loads of dealers on TikTok have come out to say the same thing. They're not taking them in either. Like, it's all well and good if you are a main dealer that can throw it back to the manufacturer, or you can absorb these price fluctuations because you're selling 100 a month. But that's not me, and that's not a lot of secondhand car dealers like myself.
Yeah. So presumably you, or am I right in saying that if the grant situation improved?
Yeah.
Or the subsidy situation, then that would change the argument. And it's
not
up to the government. Is it up to the government to do something about that?
So it's not just that. It's kind of like the perfect storm. So from a local level, what you're seeing is all of that. So grants, more infrastructure, better infrastructure. So people love throwing us to the example of Norway because we have the same population as Norway. But Norway have 25,000 charging points, right? They have a charging fast charger every 50 kilometres. We have 1,900. 19, just under 2,000 charging points in the whole of Ireland, and that includes rural Ireland. So infrastructure needs to be better. Yes, of course, there has to be a better incentive. All the grants stopped last July. They had grants towards home chargers. Now that's gone. They're only giving you 300, but your home charger costs 1,500. Then there's the other thing of apartment blocks. You know, if you're living in an apartment, you can't get a charger. Who pays for the electricity? Then there's, you know, a global issue where you've seen manufacturers completely revise from EV investment. So you've seen Hertz have let go of 20,000 Teslas because they couldn't account for all the repair costs. They didn't know. You know, the likes of Volvo have pulled out of Polestar. GM, Ford, they've all pulled back. And that's just because a world demand has to be revised. So they're now saying that these manufacturers are going to be selling ICE cars well into 2030. You know, I'm not saying it's not going to happen down the line. And I'm not saying I'm not going to start selling EVs in a couple of months if everything, you know, and that's the great thing about having your own business and free speech is you can make those decisions. But currently, the way things lie, I just won't be doing it. Okay. It's too risky.
And just back to the element of the controversial aspect of it.
Yeah.
So when did you say this? Where did you say it? And what was the controversy? And how did it become controversial?
I suppose I was just sitting in the car and I just got a call from a customer who said, look, I just want to get in my electric car. And it was like the third call I got that week. And I just said, you know what? I'm just not going to do this anymore. And because a lot of my customers communicate with me through TikTok, through Instagram, like that's my direct.
Oh, so it came out on this TikTok.
Yeah, I did a TikTok video.
And then the TikTok went viral.
Went completely viral. And I don't know what it's after getting out. Nearly a million views.
A million, right, okay.
Or something, just something crazy. Yeah. And then everyone was like, I agree with you. Same thing happening to me, you know. And then everybody just started talking about their experience and with electric cars.
And did, good afternoon to you, Nadia Dan.
Joe.
Did he get on to you?
I didn't get on to Joe.
Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon,
Nadia.
Joe.
Nadia, grew up in Fairhouse. Fantastic story in Somalia.
I love you, Joe.
War-torn Somalia, Mogadishu.
I love Joe so much.
Mogadishu.
I know.
Mogadishu. Mogadishu.
Don't forget to wash your hands.
Sure.
I would love Joe to get me on. I love Joe.
But you're on TikTok.
I know. And you were on TikTok, were you, this week?
Yeah.
Oh, and everybody wasn't happy. Were they not?
Yeah, TikTok.
I know.
We're all on TikTok.
Isn't he? Don't forget to wash your hands.
You don't need to wash your hands anymore. No, that's not funny. You don't need to wash your hands anymore.
It's terrible.
Stop taking me jokes. Stop taking me jokes.
It was controversial.
Obviously, a million views.
Yeah,
did you get a bit of reaction?
Hugely.
I got
majority was positive because people were saying, yeah, I'm going through this as well. And I tried to trade my car and I wouldn't get a value, or I can't, you know, drive the car because of range anxiety, whatever. So a lot of people were like, yeah, this is right. Why are we getting kind of shoved into this when we don't have the support there to help us in the first place? And then there was obviously a percentage of people that were coming after me. So kind of like the EV groups on Facebook and stuff. So one of the EV groups, the Irish EV Association, they obviously started criticising me on it, which is fair enough. I'm all open to a bit of criticism, but they weren't really criticising me about my EV. They were bringing up the fact I'm a female car dealer, that I put myself out there, you know, too provocatively, and that I don't pay my tax returns, and that there's no information about my tax returns online. I'm a sole trader, right? And my accountant's actually kicking my ass because I'm paying that much bloody tax. So I'm going company. So I did a video to kind of react to that. And I put up all the comments and I said, this is what EV heads are talking about. They're not even having a debate about the EVs. They're talking about me being a woman, this and that, you know. And I just said, lads, yous can all pay a fiver when I go company and yous can see exactly what I'm making, you know, if you want to see that so much.
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, so those were kind of the backlash I was getting. But of course I'm going to get that. That is a group of people who are early adapters and they're so kind of ingrained in like a green environment, but they don't see now like what's happening right now. Yes, we all want this to happen. Ireland's a very small country, okay? We shouldn't feel all the pressure on our shoulders that we have to do everything right now when the support is not there to help us. So it's all well and good when these Tesla investors and stuff like that who have money, by the way, have a serious money, they can throw out investments and buy a Tesla and throw it back and they don't care. But the reality of, again, I'll bring Mary and Joe into the equation, is that they can't, you know, they really, really can't.
Mm. Yeah. Well explained. And that's you put your side of the story across very well there. So the thing that was one of the things that came across most is, I mean, and it's the obvious question in a way. This is not about cars now. This is about you and where we are at the moment in Ireland. And that is, As a person who arrived in O'Connell Street all those years ago and experienced the kindness and decency, if you like, of ordinary Irish people, how do you feel about what's going on when you see these videos and everything? What do you think? What are your thoughts in general about the immigration issue, if there is indeed an issue that should be addressed? I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, and it's a fantastic question. And I can really see it from both sides, because I was one of those people that really needed help and Ireland gave me the help. But I can also see the other side of it, that we are also stretched here. You know what I mean? And there has to be a better process, that when people come in, like when I came in, it was done quickly. They were vetted and everything was checked out, and straight away, I know for a fact that, like, in direct provision, some people are kept there for 10 years. And I know this, you know, and that's not right either. So there needs to be a better process of, yes, vetting the people in, take who you can help, you know, and who you can't, just can't come in. Like, we, you know, and it's a tough question. It's a tough statement and a tough question to answer. But I do get it. I do really understand. It's very, very difficult, you know. I just think the process needs to be better. And it's a hard one to answer. You know, it is. And, like, I just don't think it's right, you know, when people are burning down buildings and stuff like that either, because that person who, you know, you don't know what their financials are like. You don't know who they have to feed. They have kids. Do they have loans? Stuff like that. So I think, you know, people need to direct, not their anger, but they have to kind of go to the government, look, things need to be done a little bit better here. Process needs to be better. But there's no point go mental at the immigrants coming in, because they're going to come in if they think they have a better life. Mm. And in every group of people, there's going to be a few chancers. Mm. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter where they're from. But again, if you bring in people and there's no doctors in the area, or there's not enough schools and stuff like that, that's going to put pressure on the area as well. Mm. So I absolutely see both sides.
Do you follow the story over in Britain as well, from the Stop the Boats perspective and all this sort of...
I've heard bits and pieces, but what's that? Basically, don't let the boats come in or whatever. But I thought that's what Brexit was supposed to do.
Well, don't let anything come in, I think Brexit was supposed to do. And you know, these flights to Rwanda, etc.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're kind of flying. I know, that's crazy. My mum was telling me about
exactly.
that. Yeah, no, that's crazy.
It's totally bizarre.
It's bizarre. Yeah, I know.
You know,
bring them back to Rwanda.
Which apparently is a really safe place for refugees.
What is the right answer? You know, like, what I do know as well, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the Irish government get paid to take in the immigrants. I know that by the UN, they get money, and as long as they're in direct provision. And as soon as they get out of direct provision, then that's when it becomes a kind of a taxpayer thing. So I don't know if there's something in that. That's why they're kind of staying in direct provision for a really long time, you know.
So listen, one of the things that comes across about you anyway is your strength and your ambition. No question about it. From your background to obviously inherent in your mother as well. Pass it on down to your drive. No pun intended.
Yeah.
So what does the future hold for you, Nadia?
Yeah, I suppose.
Ideally.
Yeah, like if you asked me 2 years ago, what does the future hold? I would have said, get paying my bills and paying the rent, paying my loans back and doing this and doing that. And, you know, so every year I kind of, a box gets ticked and I get better. Like if you've told me 4 years ago I would have sold a Lamborghini or I would have sold a Bentley, I would have said you're mental, because I was selling little micros. So
did you sell a Lamborghini?
I did.
Who
yeah,
did
I sold
it. Don't give me a name.
I can't really give you a name.
No, but
long
give me
story
a, give
short,
a man,
I had,
woman.
It was a man. So basically, midlife crisis age.
Wealthy.
Very wealthy.
Really, really
very,
wealthy.
Very wealthy. Yeah.
Irish.
Long story. Yeah, Irish.
Long well known.
Yes and no.
In a lot business?
These. Yeah, these people are well known, but like they
not
wouldn't be well known. You know. Yeah,
in
exactly.
Business,
in business. Yeah. But like, not even that. I've sold like you know, other big cars like Bentley Bentaygas and R8s and
Aston
Martins.
Most expensive car you've ever sold.
The Lamborghini was 330,000, and then I sold an Aston Martin DB11 a couple of weeks ago. That was 160,000.
Right.
So though, and then a Bentley Bentayga.
How much
that
do you make off that now?
Loads and loads and loads. Go on, go on, and get on to me tax returns there. Pay a fiver.
How much will he tell me?
I don't know.
So obviously, I mean, restaurants are seen as a terrible markup. Restaurants close all the time.
Yeah,
because the margins are terrible. Is there a good
terrible.
Margin in a car dealer if you can get it right?
Absolutely. But you know what? If one engine goes, it could tear you apart. So it's all about risk, right? So that's the whole thing. Some people have this thing with car dealers, oh, you're making too much money on me. But if something goes on that car, who has to fix it? I have to fix it. The more a good dealer would.
With the warranty.
Yeah. Now, some people, like, look, I know there's dealers out there that might not tell people to feck off, but I wouldn't do that because I'm too much out there at the moment, unfortunately. So I even look after people, even when I don't have to look after them, just to keep things right. But yeah, exactly. So especially with the high-end stuff, your margin has to be a little bit better in the high-end stuff because A, it might sit there for 6 months and you could be turning your money quicker on cheaper cars. So you have to have more. It's just economics. It's not that I'm out here trying to make loads of money and be underhanded and be a dodgy dealer. That's, you know, that's just the economics of it. And two, if an engine goes or if something happens, it might never, but if it does, it's really expensive. Like, it, you know, more expensive than it would be on a Passat or a BMW or whatever. So you need that bit more. Otherwise, you'd be out of business very quickly if you were getting it wrong. It's like gambling. You know, the bigger the risk, the bigger the reward. And it's exactly with the same with cars.
And do you want to stay in cars? Because I was kind of angling towards that in the last question. Do you want to stay in cars?
Or if I want to go on, what, like TV and stuff like that?
Or be a Taoiseach.
Yeah, a Taoiseach. Oh, do you know what?
We have a new Taoiseach.
Everyone,
he's 37.
Everybody says I look like Leo's love child. Everybody has been commenting that, oh, you look like Leo's love child. Are you Leo's sister? So maybe myself and Leo, you never know. Maybe I've talked to my mom.
No, but sorry, you're being coy. Is there anything else you'd like to do?
Listen,
because, see, I think that whatever you turn your mind to is you're going to get pretty
absolute,
damn close to
look,
doing it.
Absolutely. Look, politics, if I could get in there, I absolutely
would.
You would?
You're a political person.
I would. Now, I would probably piss off a lot of people, but I also think...
That's nothing new to you.
Yeah, I think I would have a lot of people going, you know what, fair play, she's dead right. But again, I probably would piss off a lot of people. TV, I have something exciting coming down the line.
Yeah,
I can't speak about it.
Yeah. Irish TV?
No, UK. But
Terrestrial?
No, terrestrial. What do you mean? Space?
I suppose. No, I suppose like BBC or ITV, or is it more...
Not the bigger
satellite.
One, a bit kind of, I don't know, am I saying
niche-y.
Too much? Not niche-y, like very well known,
yeah.
But not those two.
Dave.
I can't say anything. God damn it.
Okay.
Anyway, I can't say anything. So I have that coming down the line.
Great.
And a few bits and pieces then as well.
Yeah.
And obviously all this lovely opportunity coming in here to talk to you and stuff like that is leading to different things.
Yeah.
So who knows, you know, I'd love to come out with like a lingerie line as well in the future. But then I was thinking men are my audience. They're not going to buy my lingerie. So maybe I need to come out with something for men. So I was thinking like come out with a nice men's range, whether it's like aftershave or a nice briefcase, stuff like that. I'm working on merch at the moment after my calendar did well. So I'm working on, you know, merch and selling a few bits and pieces. But I don't want to come out with crap. So I want to think about it and I want it to be fab, just like my stock.
Brilliant. Nadia, such a pleasure to talk to you. Where can people reach you on social media? So you're Nadia Adan?
Yeah.
At Nadia Adan Official?
Yeah, so just Nadia. So on Instagram, if you want to see where everything's happening, Ashford Motors on Instagram. And the reason we keep it Ashford Motors on Instagram because... Instagram is kind of like my website. That's the way the world has gone now. Like, you know, we don't need to have a fancy showroom paying crazy rent every month. As long as you've got great social media presence and you've got a really good connection with your customers and you're very transparent and they can see the stock and the videos of the stock and you've got a good relationship with them, you kind of can have your website on social media, which is amazing. It's a totally a new way of selling cars that has never been done before. And then TikTok is kind of where we have the crack and it's kind of like a Ryanair vibe. I don't know if you've looked at Ryanair on TikTok, but it's just mad stuff. So we're a bit like that on TikTok where, you know, we have the crack with people. If people say, you know, if they're a bit negative with us, we respond funnily with a bit of sarcasm rather than delete. A lot of people delete. We don't. We welcome criticism because it gives us a chance to respond.
Yeah.
And then that gets more of
modern,
you. That gets more
that
views.
That is the modern way. Yeah. Just embrace them all.
Embrace
just
it. Everything.
Somebody smart, probably like yourself, just to do their social media for them.
Exactly. Well, I'll you can hire me. No problem.
Yeah.
I'll go work with any company and give them a hand.
Politics needs it as well on their social media. They need people.
They do. Sometimes with politics, though, no one's a winner. That's the only thing, you know.
Nadia, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
And my thanks to Nadia Adan for coming in and joining me on the Mario Rosenstock podcast. My thanks to you, as always, for listening. You can contact me directly, mariorosenstock@gmail.com. I read them all and I get back to most of them, as many of you know. If you have any comments, constructive criticisms, compliments, ideas for sketches, ideas for guests, please shoot them by me. And if you can, tell one other person in your circle about this podcast if you're enjoying it. Thank you so much. See you next week.